The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Rob Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, really happy to have this dude on. Kip Winger from the band Winger, amongst a bunch of other things. You may not realize how talented this dude is, so it was really cool to get him on and talk about his career. But really quickly, if you want to win a PlayStation 5, Yo Delta has an opportunity for you to win a brand new one, a brand new PlayStation 5, by simply going over to YoDelta.com to enter to win. There's no purchase necessary, but their Delta 8 products are great, and you can get high, and you should totally get some. But just go over to YoDelta.com, and you could win yourself a brand new PlayStation 5. Remember, we do this show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And if you are a fan of the show, just head over to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the code SDR, and subscribe to the network. Or don't, and just listen and get the show out there. Check out our YouTube page. The newest 20 episodes are always there. Just spread the show around. We had the best month ever in June. Hopefully July will end that way as well. We do numbers every month and figure out how we're doing. But it means that you guys are doing what we're wanting and just spreading the love. That's all I care about. So right now, here it is, the Winger episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, Mr. James Mattern. How are you, sir?
Buddy, I'm fired up.
We got Shannon here. We're just going to jump right into it because we got the dude on the phone on the Zoom. I don't even know where are you right now, Kip? Where on the planet are you?
Nashville.
You were one of the early adopters to moving to Nashville, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It was, yeah, 2002.
You and what's his name? Kiefer from Cinderella, the two rock stars that I sort of know somewhat that moved early on to Nashville.
He was here before me, actually, a couple years before. So, yeah.
Are you guys friendly enough where he's like, dude, you should come check out Nashville? Or you just knew that he went there?
And I just knew, we're friendly, but I mean, I know he didn't say it. Tom's a bit of a recluse, but Paul Taylor and I moved here at the same time.
Okay. I've never been in Nashville, and I've heard very good things about Nashville. James, Nashville ever?
No, but I've watched that episode that Anthony Bourdain did there enough where I guarantee I love it. Like, there's,
I think
like,
I'd love it too.
I would bet the farm on it. I would bet.
And doesn't what's his name? Isn't the guy from Jack White? Isn't he in Nashville? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, dude, everyone's in Nashville now. I mean, everybody's moved here, so you know, most of the rock guys have moved here. Yeah.
Is it a cool rock scene? Like, if you go out at night, I mean, we're all older, but if you do go out to the local, watering hole, as the kids call it, do you see bands playing and it has like a cool rock and roll vibe? Or is it more country or what?
Depends on where you go. You get a little bit of everything here, including classical. So, you can get everything. Yeah, it's pretty cool for that. There's tons of music going on, all kinds of all different genres.
That's great. All right, so let's just hit this off the top. Of course, it is Kip Winger. Winger, theband.com is the website. Winger's playing M3 in September, Monsters on the Mountain October, and I read starting a new Winger album. Sorry?
July.
Oh, July. Did I say September? Sorry, I don't know why I said that. And then I saw clips of you recording already, at least vocals, for a new Winger record on your Instagram. Was that a teaser? Was that just you trying stuff out, or are you already physically recording?
Oh yeah, no, we're almost done. I mean, not totally, I'm 3/4 of the way finished.
Okay, of the new Winger, which I think you're calling 7, is that right?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
That's an easy title because it's your 7th record, so you won't have to forget that. So let's start with this, which is interesting because about 6 years ago, I think it was the last Winger record, and we'll get into some of the other stuff too, the classical music, the broad the play that you wrote. We'll get into all of it, but the last album from Winger was Better Days Coming, which amazingly hit, you know, top 20 something on Billboard. It was really well received. And then during the pandemic, you released this like superstar lineup thing that a lot of people were doing during the pandemic of that song because it seemed so aptly titled for what we were all going through. And you got a shit ton of rock stars to come in and sing lines from the song. Two questions. One, who was in the fucking plane that was too busy to actually record anywhere?
I don't get it.
Somebody was in a plane the whole time. He never left the plane. He's on in a plane singing along.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was my friend, John Weisswasser. Yeah. He's a pilot friend of mine. Yeah.
He just wanted everyone to know.
Pilot.
I'm so
it
busy.
Makes sense.
I get it, but still.
Yeah, you know, he thought it would be a cool shot. I agreed with him. So
it was cool, but it just seemed, I was like, we get it, dude. You can fly a plane. I don't know.
Like he was a butcher flying a plane. I mean, come on, goddamn it.
Yes, that's true. I thought it was a rocket. I was trying to figure out who it was. And then I think it's Reb's. Is it Reb's granddaughter or daughter that's dancing behind him the whole time?
Granddaughter.
God, I'm old. Jesus Christ. And then the most important question is, where the fuck was my invite? Eddie Trunk's in it. I'm not cool enough to make it into your song.
Sorry. I just happened to be talking to Eddie at the time. And, you know, I apologize. I'll put you in the next one.
I'll hold my breath for that. No worries. That sounds great. Right, so now we'll start at the beginning and work our way up. So, you know, you've been on Tour Bus a bunch of times, my old radio show. And back then it was always 5-minute interviews, 10-minute interviews. We never really go deep into the world of Kip Winger. But now we have a little extra time, so we delve deeper. Is that cool with you, sir?
Sure.
All right, so the thing that I think are people don't realize, you're one of these people that has just been musical from a very early age. If I'm not mistaken, you had a band with your brothers, and your first professional gig was when you were like 7 or 8 years old.
Yes, yeah. That
where was that?
I don't remember where we played. It was, you know, I lived in Denver, and we played we did a gig at this little asthmatic center for these kids, you know. I mean, I was probably about 8 years old. So, and then we played the schools and stuff like that. You know, we played a bunch of gigs between that 8 and 12, you know.
Did your parents see that you had, I know they were both musical, but did they figure out which one of you can play the bass, which one of you can play guitar? Did they throw all the instruments in a room and let you fight over it? How did you figure out who was going to do what?
They bought my brother a guitar and my other brother drums one Christmas, but they didn't get me anything because they thought I was too young. And so then it was obvious that I would play bass to make the band work. Right. So, you know, but I wanted to play bass. I was totally into it, you know? So, you know, after that, we just kind of became a band and we had one other kid from the neighborhood in the band.
That was four of you.
It was a 4-piece band.
Oh, okay. And now the other thing that I, you know, as a Winger fan my whole life, we always heard, oh, that Kip Winger was a ballet dancer. But if I'm not mistaken, it started with martial arts. And martial arts, somehow some girlfriend of yours talked you into ballet because you thought it was cool that they could do splits like Bruce Lee.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I did martial arts and my girlfriend at the time said, none of my girlfriends will take ballet with me. I really would like to do it. And I volunteered actually.
She must've been pretty hot, I guess.
So I took to it like a duck to water. Like I got in the class and I was like, okay, this is it. You know, she ended up quitting and I just, you know, really into it. You know?
So she left and you stayed in the class.
I stayed in and got in the company. And did a few performances with the company and stuff. So it's an amazing form of exercise, by the way, super artistic, and very, very difficult.
I don't deny it. I can't even touch my toes, Kip.
But I was always thinking that, you know, because Freddie Mercury and Ian Anderson wore tights, that they must have done it. So I'd take it to another level.
Oh, that made it fair. Yes, James.
Did you ever combine both? Did you ever like get in a street fight and then do ballet in the martial arts to make the dude feel that less?
You think this is West Side Story? You think he's fighting in West Side Story?
Just in case someone talks shit. Maybe someone's a thrash metal guy, was giving Winger shit, and you were like, yo, man, you don't want this smoke, and then did some Black Swan into some Kung Fu. I'd never open my mouth again if that's how I got my ass whooped. I'm just saying, man.
That sounds like a good movie, actually. No. I'm not a fighter, and I only got in a few fights when I was in, you know, junior high.
Like, James, before you talk shit to me, let me check you. Check out my Pleiades. All right. Before you throw it out. It's the only word I know. And that's, I think,
listen,
ballet.
Listen, I challenge anyone to go in a ballet class.
Oh, I couldn't do it. I know for sure I can't do it. I by no means am I anywhere near flexible enough to even try and put my foot on a bar.
It's not just about that, dude. I mean, it's hard.
I don't deny it. I try to do yoga 20 minutes a day. I feel like I'm dying. And that's nothing.
Yeah.
Do you still do it?
I do. I haven't lately because of, you know, COVID and stuff, but I'm actually, you know, planning on going to do some classes. Not much, but if I had a studio like right across the street, I'd do it every single morning. But
I saw in an interview that you said when you're writing songs, sometimes if you're happy with how it goes, you start doing ballet around your room. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I do my classical music, because one of my big goals in life was always to write music for ballet, for ballet dancers. So, cause I had done it. And so I felt like I could write the music and, you know, enhance the expression of how they would feel dancing. And so, you know, inevitably I'll break out into something in my living room.
That's great. That's pretty wild. I try, like, if I was going to try to learn anything ballet, what's a starting level? What's the first move I could try and do? Is it some sort of kick, high kick, or
a plie?
A plie would be the first one. That's where you do the, I'm going to raise my feet, like you do this, right? Beep, 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 and down, right?
No. All you do is just stand there and bend your knees and sink down a little bit and come up.
Oh, yeah. That's the way your feet are aiming this way and you do like the knee thing. Yeah, I get that now. Yeah.
Ralph, what was the sound? Beep, beep, beep?
Beep, beep, beep.
Goddamn R2-D2?
You have to make the noise or the move doesn't count. That's how it works. Okay, so now, just to keep going down memory lane, you moved into New York City in your early 20s, and that's where you met Reb Beach and courtesy of Bo Hill. Is that right?
Yes.
And Bo, obviously a legend in the rock production world. Me, I know most for Rat, but he's done a lot of other bands. How did you meet him and how did that come about?
I met Bo in Denver, actually, when I was 16. He lived there and had a record deal on Sony, I think Columbia, with a band called Airborne, and he was doing his records. My manager at the time met him backstage at a Heart concert and introduced us. And then he produced me and my brothers. And then we became kind of the musicians that helped him on some of his demos and stuff.
Oh, really? So you were already at the level that you had management in your early 20s and you already had.
No, I was 15 or 16.
Then. Oh, wow. That's crazy.
I was 16. So 16 through about 20, we lived in Denver, and I played bass on all his demos and we sang backgrounds and stuff like that. And, you know, kind of cut my teeth on that and, you know, kind of learned his whole world.
And did you, because I know you wrote a song for Kix. What came first, that you wrote that song or you moved to the city and joined Alice Cooper? Which one was they both happened roughly the same year.
Wrote the song and I had the riff and Bo was producing Midnight Dynamite. And they were maybe looking for some material and they liked the riff that I wrote. And so they took the music and rewrote the words.
Oh, okay. And so you have, I never checked the record, but if I look at the record, are you getting writer's credit on that record?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome.
I played it with them last time we did Monsters of Rock Cruise.
Oh, wow. Those are great guys. Kix are just super cool dudes. Super cool.
Very.
And you joined Alice Cooper in 85, which is, I think, when most people, at least of my genre, you know, my knowledge first heard of you was when you joined Alice Cooper. You're there for a couple years and then somehow you decide, OK, it's time for me to start my own band. I'm in Alice Cooper, who's arguably one of the biggest rock stars in America. But you knew you were ready to go out on your own.
Well, I always wanted to do my own band because I wanted to write my own music. So, you know, that was always going to be the case my whole life. And so it was great to get the Alice Cooper experience. And Alice himself was very encouraging for me to leave and do my own thing. On one hand, everybody thought I was nuts to leave it because it was very successful and it was kind of a big comeback for him. But I felt like I wanted to take my shot and, you know, I was very probably too confident actually at that time. And it took a while to get signed and stuff, but Reb was also getting offers from other bands, and we decided to kind of make a pact to not take any outside work and just write an album for 6 months and see if we could get signed.
That's crazy. And I know also that I read that when you got the Cooper gig, you were waiting tables in Jersey, and then a few weeks later, you're performing in front of thousands of people with the Alice Cooper band.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, we rehearsed for a few months, and then the first gig was Joe Louis Arena, you know, live on MTV with 17,000 people. Yeah.
Did you shit yourself, or was enough of your life as a child actor, I mean, child performer, that it didn't freak you out as much? I mean, because it seems like a big jump.
It was a big jump. I was prepared as a performer because I'd played my whole life. So I was comfortable on stage, and mm-hmm. and I was really, you know, I was really into it, but yeah, it was a shocker. Yeah.
It's just crazy thought. Okay. So now,
is it tough being like in Alice Cooper's band when there's theatrics and you're just trying to like hit eight notes and shit, and then like there's a guillotine? Is that, I always wondered that.
No, it was right up my alley because I'd done ballet and done performances in theater and stuff. So, I mean, it was really, it was a perfect gig for me. I played right along, you know, right into it. It was awesome.
Did Alice want to incorporate any ballet moves because he knew your background and said, all right, why don't we do some ballet here and make it into the stage?
No, but his wife was a ballerina. Cheryl was a really great dancing performer, really good at ballet and other types of dance. And so we had that in common. So Alice understood that ballet was cool. And, you know, Cheryl was a great dancer.
Did you feel a need at all? Because think about how the testosterone filled rock and roll of the 80s. To hide your ballet background, or were you proud of it from day one when you were doing that?
Well, I mean, you know, the press made fun of me for it. So I had some managers along the way that were like, hey, man, play that down and don't do all that stuff, you know. But I felt like it was what set me apart. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was just taking Freddie Mercury and David Lee Roth to another level. I mean, that's what I was doing.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, I mean, David Lee Roth did splits all the time. You just probably did them more professionally.
So it's like, you know, that was my intention. And then, you know, when you become successful, people want to knock you down. And I certainly had quite a few people along the way trying to, you know, knock me down.
Right. You know, what's crazy is that I just watched an interview of yours, and I always saw on the first Winger record, it said the name Sahara in the image.
Yeah.
And I never knew why. That wasn't the name of the record. That wasn't a song on the record, but it just was in the image. And it was Winger ST, self-titled. And I found out that, oh, that was the name of your band originally.
It was. No, yeah, that was the name of the band. So when we couldn't use it because apparently the trademark was taken. So we just called it the name of the record. And then the record company missed that.
Oh, they just screwed that up. But it's funny because I always thought, like, well, any band that's named after one dude in the band has to be a hard sell, right? Like John Bon Jovi, you know, Bon Jovi or Slaughter or whatever, Van Halen. Like, it's got to be a hard sell. So did you have to convince them, all right, guys, look, we're going to use my name because I got a cool name? Or because this last minute change happened, it was easier to make this happen? And Beach is not a great name.
Yeah, that's what it was. I mean, last minute thing, we couldn't come up with a better name. And the record company president at the time thought it was a cool name. I never thought it was a cool name. I thought it was a terrible name.
Dope name. Sir, don't spell your last name short. Your name might be the coolest name in the history of rock.
I'm just that's great. I'm glad you guys think so. That's nice.
1A, Kip Winger. 1B, Ricky Rocket. That's all I'm fucking saying. But you
I
got
don't
it by
Ricky
that
Rocket
much.
Is his real name. Yeah. I had a friend in high school. His name was John Diamond. And I'm like, that dude should be a rock star. It's a great fucking name.
Or a Beastie Boy.
Yeah.
Jeweler.
All right. Before we go any further, you know these guys, Yo Kratom. They have been supporters of this style of comedy for a long time now. We love them. And they now have launched Yo Delta. Yo Delta is a brand new sponsor. They are all about the Delta 8. And all you really need to know is that Delta 8 can get you high all summer long. If you're over 21 and you live in the majority of the states where it's legal, I think it's like 46 of them or something. I'm not 100% sure. But it's time to stock up and enjoy a summer of Delta 8. Delta 8 is something that's found in weed that can be legally shipped nationwide and gets you high. They have vapes, they have gummies, and most importantly, it is quite potent and legal in almost every state in the country. So just go to YoDelta.com, stock up on your Delta 8 gummies, your Delta 8 vapes, and if you use the promo code GAS, you're going to get 25% off your entire order. So once again, go to YoDelta.com, use the promo code GAS, stock up on your vapes and gummies, and let's get back into it. And now, then the second record, you know, that first album comes out, it's huge. I know we have, and then we'll move on to some new stuff, but obviously 17 was the one that everyone knew you for originally from that point forward. And it's funny, right before you came on, we were looking up Ages of Consent around the globe. So I know that also you were in good company at that time, because She Was Just 17 is a song by a line in the Beatles song, and Christine 16 is a line in the Kiss song. So it's not like you were breaking ground there, but I was 18 when it came out. So for me, it spoke to me. I was banging a 17-year-old girl all the time. It worked out perfectly.
Good for you. I never got it because I think in Colorado at the time, even 16 was the legal age. So I ripped the title off from Kingdom Come. They had a song on there called 17. And I was like dry that day. So I just told, you know, I'll write a song called 17. And it became this whole, you know, issue. But like you say, McCartney did it. So, you know, fuck it. I mean, it is what it is. You know, now people are like, oh, God, I can't believe you still play that song. But I mean, you know,
everybody doesn't update the lyrics. She's only 43. That would be fine.
Yeah, totally. 48 right now. you know, everybody's going to throw stuff.
Yo, people can only protest that song in like a few states. So that's all it is, man. So fuck.
No, cause, yeah, wait. It's because it's New York City. I think 17 is legal, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yes, it is.
According to my parole officer, it is.
Well, there you go. I mean, so, you know, it's just a fun song. It was like, you know, a pop song on the surface. But when you go under the hood, like you'll never, ever see a cover band that can play that song correctly because the guitar riff is very intricate and the music's, you know, more difficult than you think, and playing and singing it is really difficult.
I mean, I love that. I mean, I'm a big fan forever, but so I get it. I'm not as musical. James is more, he plays guitar, so he gets the nuance better than I just either like things or don't like things. But James is actually a talented guitar player, hence he has his bass in behind just in honor of you. And then so just quickly, then the second album came out, third album Pull, where you said to me once in an interview, which is funny, that because that was when already, I hate to use the term hair rock, but 80s rock, whatever you want to call it, was on the way out. And you said it was called Pull at that point because people were putting it in skeet shoots and screaming Pull and then shooting it because the career was the that era was over, right?
Yeah. People were waiting for us to put the album out so they could shoot it down.
Yeah, just unfortunate. So the world changed very quickly. It was, you know, we were all part of that. We all saw it happen. But the one thing I saw that made me happy was that because you were a little older at the time, most of the guys that were coming out of the time were in their like 21, 22. I think you must have been about 25, 26, maybe older. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe a little older.
I was like, I think I was 27 when I got my deal, maybe 28. Yeah, I think I was 28 or 29 when the album came out.
So then you're probably in your early 30s by the time the third album, I don't even know how old you were, but you, when you were making good money in those big early days of Winger, you had the wherewithal to save your money because you knew this wasn't going to last forever.
Yes.
You're one of the few.
Yeah, probably. I mean, we were never a headline act, so it wasn't like I made millions. Okay. So, and also I'm really more of a student of music. I'm not like the rock star type that, you know, I don't thrive on being famous or something like that. You know, my intention on my epitaph, I just wanted to say good musician, you know? So, I mean, when the records were successful, I was like, okay, this may not last forever. So I didn't spend all my money.
Did it then knowing that?
But I will tell you, I mean, you know, I had a lot of lean years. I mean, you know, when the Beavis and Butthead, Metallica thing, all that, you know, we were out of a gig for years and years and years and years. So, I mean, that money had to last. So.
Right. You call that period your dark times, which I think, you know, for music it was as well. But that you touch on that for a second. I remember the story with Beavis and Butthead. It was supposed to be Nelson. And then somebody switched it to Winger last minute for some reason. I don't remember why, but I remember that was the plan and somehow it became Winger.
I didn't know that. I mean, I heard that once a long time ago. Now that you reminded me that that could be what it was.
Yeah, but I think if I could be wrong here, but I believe Viacom owned the label that had Nelson. So whatever label that was they were on was owned by Viacom, and they said to the guy that created Beavis and Butthead, I can't think of his name right now, but said, no, dude, you can't say Nelson. You got to switch it. And last minute, they switched it to Winger, which sucks because as you just said, to be known as a musician at the time, it had to fucking break your heart that all of a sudden your band is being made fun of when it was heralded for a long time. That had to not be easy.
It was extremely difficult. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was... I spent my whole life working on being a good musician and trying to really do high quality stuff. And then to be made the laughing stock of the music business during that time was, you know, that was quite a blow.
Right. It had to be. I can't even imagine, especially as you just said, that musician is what's more important to you, not rock star. And they kind of took that away from you in a way, you know. But then when I first met you was late 90s, when you started doing these solo acoustic things. You were going around just with an acoustic guitar, playing Winger songs and playing other songs. Like, how did that, like, was that come about out of, well, what the fuck else am I going to do? Like, where did that inception come from?
Yeah, I mean, I had a small record company that put my first solo album out, and because nobody would do it, the name was totally toxic. So I went back to a manager that I had worked with years before that, and we made a plan to put an album out. And basically the only gig I could get was, you know, I did like 30 Borders bookstores, and I played like 4:30 in the afternoon to 10 people. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, that was humbling. But what I've learned is that music, you know, you can play to 10 people or 80,000 people and the message is the same. I mean, music speaks to everybody, and it can heal your soul. It doesn't matter if there's one person or 100,000 people listening to it. It doesn't matter.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I love when I see a group or a singer that gives 100% to 10 people as opposed to being annoyed that there's only 10 people. The first time I saw you do that live was at the venue's not there anymore. It's BB King's in Manhattan. You were there doing an acoustic show. So you came in and did Tour Bus Radio, and then we went and saw you there. And I was floored by it because I didn't know that you could, you know, sound as good live as you did, because I only saw Winger once back in the day. It was Winger, Cinderella, Bullet Boys, and Winger. You were in the middle spot. Bullet Boys opened, and it was one of these venues with just really awful sound. It was like just... I couldn't help tell anybody. It was so, sound was bouncing everywhere. So I never really was able to say, oh, no, he's phenomenal live. And when I saw you do that, I was like, oh, he actually can perform live. Pretty wild. Who knew?
That was always surprising to people that thought I was a poser. But listen, I studied classical guitar for 5 years when I was 16. And, you know, I educated myself in a lot, you know, so I'm not a, I gave up being a great instrumentalist a long time ago. I mean, if you want a good bass player, call up Billy Sheen. I'm overqualified for rock and underqualified for classical. And I do both, you know, but what I do is write, you know, composing is really where I'm at. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I want to get into that too. But my last question here now on the solo front was there a thought, maybe don't come out as Kip Winger. Don't put it out as a Kip Winger record. Don't tell people it's you, because it's a good record. Let's call it something else. Let's call it Sahara.
Well, yeah, we did think about that. And then after a point, it was like, why would I be running from myself? You know?
Right. I get it. But I remember I was working in radio at the time. They would sometimes, is back when labels actually existed and would spend money on records, they would send you a record with just a question mark on it without a name, because it was somebody that was toxic, I guess, or, you know, the name where people would stay away from. So they would hide it. So once was a rap group and once was a rock group. It was Enough's Enough, their album. And then remember the rapper Paperboy? He had the song Diddy, right?
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, so his follow-up record, no one would take it seriously, so they put it out with no name on it. And I was like, oh, I like this. Who is this? And I found out, oh, shit. You had to go somewhere and find out who it was. So it was kind of a way to, like, soften the blow. Let listen without any preconceived negativity and just listen.
Right.
It's hard to do that sometimes, I guess.
It is hard.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So now, the ballet, I guess, is what got you into classical music originally. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. How do I say that? So I studied classical guitar when I was 16, and that's before I did ballet. So, you know, I listened to Baroque music, and I studied some of that stuff and played Bach and all that, and took piano lessons and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't hear like the really lush, amazing orchestral scores until I was in ballet. You know, when I heard Stravinsky and Ravel and Debussy, and then later on, I got more involved in really just focusing on living composers and music that was written in the last 100 years, rather than like the classic Beethovens and Tchaikovsky and all that.
So when did this, like, it's a passion of yours for most of your life, as you're saying, but it was about 5 years ago when you put out the conversation with Nijinsky, and I think that's about right, which is a 180 of anything Winger. It is a classical rock of classic record. Classical is the right way to say it. I'm fucking not very musically inclined. How did you make this decision? I'm going to do something that fucking nobody is expecting me to do.
Well, it wasn't about that. I don't care about what people think or anything. I just do what I've always wanted to do, and what I've always wanted to do from a very early time is to write music for the orchestra. So, but I didn't want to be, I didn't want to go about it like a lot of rock or pop musicians do, where they, you know, write something and get somebody else to finish it for them or something like that. I wanted to learn how to communicate on the terms of the orchestra itself. So I studied with a guy in University of New Mexico for a while. And then I studied with somebody at Vanderbilt University for a while. And then I studied with a very famous composer named Richard Daniel Poor, from Manhattan School of Music, where I would play. It was all private study. I flew up to New York once a month for a year and studied with Richard. These guys are all my friends, Michael Keurig from Vanderbilt and Richard Herman from University of New Mexico.
Were you able to get these kind of private tutorings because of your namesake, or did you know them elsewhere? Like, how are you able to make that happen?
No, you just call up, you find a composition teacher, you know. People are willing to teach you. I mean, it's private lessons, you know. In university, composition lessons are private anyway, so it's always one-on-one.
No, what do I know?
I'm very autodidactic, so I read a lot of books myself. I mean, I put 10 years into it before I had anything published.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
At least, I mean.
How different is it as a complete neophyte to writing any kind of music?
Well, you have to know every nuance of, you know, how the aperture of your mouth when you're playing oboe, or to, you know, the transposition of instruments and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, but it all comes very naturally to me. I don't recommend it if for somebody who just wants to do it just to do it. I mean, you have to, I always say, like, I do this because I can't not do it.
You know? That's how I feel about masturbating.
There you have it. So, yeah.
That's a symphony. That's a symphony number 5.
Yeah.
So does that mean you have to write like every nuance of every instrument when you're doing a composition? Like, I don't know anything about it. So Is that what you're doing? You're looking at every section and implying every note for every section? Is that what you do?
Yes.
Sounds very time consuming.
One second.
This is great. Well, I want to ask him. I'm obsessed with composers.
Really?
Yeah. I guess we're still rolling, but I would say Duke Ellington on his deathbed was writing on napkins in the hospital. Like doing that shit.
This is my first symphony that's going to be premiered in Nashville. I got a commission for Nashville to write an album. So I'm doing two pieces. Symphony number one and a violin concerto. So, you know, this is what it looks like.
Jesus Christ. And you handwrite every one of these fucking things.
Well, I don't, you know, nowadays you can do a lot of it on computer, I do write with a pencil sometimes, and I counterpoint on with a pencil, and you know, you can program a lot of it now, but it's the principle's the same. You have to, you know, you really have to know how to make the instruments resonate and voicings and registers, you know, like the violin starts at G3 and goes to, you know, I mean, you have to know all that stuff.
Do you do this casually? Like as a comic, if I get something comes to me, I can write it in my notes. Like say you, me and Ralph and Shannon are eating at a diner at 2 a.m. and all of a sudden you just go, hold on guys. Can you just grab the napkin and be like D minor, bloop, 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 and do that shit?
No.
You don't do the bloop, 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 bloops?
No, I don't.
Everyone knows that's how Gershwin started, the bloop, bloop, bloops.
That's a very, you know, the old school way is to do that. My instructor did that because he grew up doing that. So I grew up with a computer. So I program a lot of it, but I don't think of music in terms of notes. I see it. So that's a little different. I'll see a big thing of a shape of a sound and I'll know what it feels like. And then I have to try to figure out how.
Sounds very, very Queen's Gambit-y. Like that's how she saw the.
Isn't that like synesthesia? Would that count as that?
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is.
Shannon coming in with the fucking $5 word. Holy
shit. Well, that's like when you experience sound as like a color or a shape or something like that.
Oh, I never heard
of that. Yes. Yeah, it is. It is just
wow.
Like,
let me ask you this. Let's say you're going to sit down and I don't know how long. Is there a certain length of time that a classical movement piece needs to be? Is it that regimented? Or if you want to do 3 minutes or 20 minutes, it doesn't matter. Is there a science?
There's no rules now so much. You can do whatever you want. But if you're trying to program on a symphonic performance, it's always good to, you know, if they want to, you know, there's time markers. Like maybe you'll give them an 8-minute piece for this part of the performance. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a major work, you might want it to be 20 minutes. Most of my pieces are 20 minutes. The symphony's like 25 minutes.
All right. So let's say 25 minutes of a classical movement versus one song in rock. How long is the difference of time that you have to put in to make one or the other? Is it an insurmountable difference?
Well, it's not insurmountable because I've done it, but I mean, you know, my symphony took a year and a half. It usually takes me about a year and a half to write one piece, you know.
And a song?
Well, it depends. I could spend 6 months on a song, or I could knock one out in 2 days, or you know, even you know, it's rare for me to do it in one day, but you know, it's possible.
So obviously, writing a rock song is a little easier.
Yes, yeah, especially after how many I've written. So lyrics are always the tricky part.
And also, I mean, what's amazing is the conversations with Nijinsky. I'm sure I'm saying the name wrong, but you got nominated for a Grammy. It was a number one classical record. That's fucking insane that you find a new path late in life and are embraced by the community that way. That's had to feel incredible.
It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Did you call up the people that did Beavis and Butthead and said, go fuck yourself when that came out?
No. It speaks for itself. You know, I mean, to be nominated for a contemporary classical composition was really setting the record straight. Let's put it that way.
I mean, it's insane to even think about. I don't know if this, how about this? Do you know any of your other fellow rock stars that have a passion for classical music that have also tried to go down this path? Or are you the only one, you know?
Now, there's a lot of guys like Stuart Copeland's done it long before I did. He's written several operas. Johnny Greenwood has done a lot of stuff like that, more for film, but he's an educated, knowledgeable classical guy. Steve Vai, who I correspond with mostly about classical music. We email each other our classical music. That's really the basis of our relationship, honestly.
Ironically, that's the basis of Shannon and I's relationship. Just classical music.
Steve's very gifted composer that, you know, and he gets a lot of stuff performed, particularly in Europe. You know, John Lord from Deep Purple put his hand in. And but of course, Paul McCartney also has done it. Although I think McCartney works with orchestrators and stuff. And so, yeah, there's a handful of guys. Nobody's been nominated for a composition. There is a difference.
Hacks is what you're saying. They're all hacks. I get it.
No. But it was a great honor. And I was on the committee the year after that. And they are mean. They are really mean. So, you know, it wasn't easy.
Did you find now that your passion for classical is replacing your passion for rock? Because also you did write a musical, you know, Get Jack, which is a whole other aspect. Is it hard? Like I read somewhere that you said that you actually literally put on different hats when you're going into these different modes.
I used to do that. I used to have like, okay, now I'm this, now I'm that. But now I've picked my battles. I was very focused on classical because I didn't know how to do it. So I was very passionate about that. Like, I don't want to do anything but that for a while. And then once I mastered the, listen, I haven't mastered it, but I understand it. And now I could, you know, I don't need to take lessons anymore, so to speak. Even though I still do, I feel like one feeds the other, really, honestly.
Is it fair to assume that most of your fans of your classical record have no idea who the fuck Winger is?
Probably not. I doubt there's many people that know me at my classical music and don't know my band. Maybe some, but again, the fact that I got recognized by the Grammy committee speaks for itself in the idea that it is legitimate. You know, I'm not a hack, so to speak, but the third component to your question was the Get Jack factor. Now, musical theater, the reason I did that is that I was writing 20-minute pieces and I was thinking I wanted to write something bigger, like a 2-hour piece, like an opera or a musical. And the first opportunity that came to me was this musical idea with my partner Damian Gray on this. And actually, musical theater is where all of my skill set can come together, like the rock and the classical and writing for singers and writing
and the dancing,
all of it. And so although I don't love the process of the theater of musicals, because it's kind of like the thing that never gets finished. They keep rewriting. So that the process was a little bit iffy for me, because I'm the kind of person that wants to write something, get it the way I want it, and then move on, because I can't continue to be inspired by something it took me 3 years to write Get Jack, by the way. So I can't continue to be inspired by something where I'm just changing it over and over and over again.
What is the concept of Get Jack? What's it actually about?
It's about the five women that Jack the Ripper killed who come back for vengeance on Jack.
Whoa, I like that. That sounds scary a little bit.
COVID COVID wiped out the Broadway thing for now. So we're still.
Was it going to go to actual Broadway? Was that the plan?
Well, honestly, no. We wrote that thing as a piece that might be in alternative theaters. We weren't focused on getting it to Broadway, although that would be awesome. But it's a pretty dark piece, so it's not like your happy musical. And by the way, I don't particularly like musicals, you know.
So I hate musicals personally, but I liked Avenue Q. I thought that was good. Ones. Which one? What are your three, James?
Three good ones. Grease, West Side Story, Rocky Horror. That's it, baby. Drop the mic.
What about modern? What about something in your life this like last 20 years?
Buddy, I've been broke most of these last 20 years. I can't afford to go to Broadway.
I haven't seen a lot of them either. I just knew what to do with this particular piece. So.
did you write the story, or the story existed already and you wrote the music?
No. And that's an interesting point. My co-writer, Damian Gray, wrote the book and the lyrics. And it was the first work that I'd ever written where I wrote music to the words, because normally I write the music and then I write the lyrics afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was very freeing. That really freed me up to, do something very, it was really a great process actually, but I'm not the kind of lyricist myself that would sit down and write a lyric and then write a song to it. You know, I always write the music first. So if I'm working in that genre, you kind of have to write the music after the lyric.
What if we're back in that hypothetical diner 2 a.m. in Nashville? Do you think the lyrics would come to you and you'd write on the napkin, or no?
Yeah, lyrics come to me all kinds of random places.
See, while we're eating our waffle fries, it all comes together.
All right, before we go any further, if you're an auto mechanic out there, or you're just some sort of much more manly than I guy that likes to do it yourself and work on your own cars, well, we got a news for you. It's Rock Auto, R-O-C-K Auto, rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. This is your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. Rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts for you, who aren't really sure what you're looking for, never quite sure what you need, and then after all the hassle, will still charge you storefront markups. If you go to rockauto.com, you can easily find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on your own car. So if you're a car guy right now, go to rockauto.com, check out the parts available for your car. You're just going to have a lot of fun just browsing and looking at all the different car parts. So once more, go to rockauto.com, rockauto.com. This is how confident their prices are. They don't even need a promo code. You just head over there. They're so sure their prices are going to be great that they don't even care. Don't use a promo code. Just go to rockauto.com. All right, let's get back into it. You described somewhere that writing an orchestra is like those magic eye photos that Spencer gives, that you just kind of have to step back and eventually let it all come into focus to where you see the bigger picture. Is your process for Rock and for the musical entirely different than that, or they all kind of work that way?
Now, you know, writing an orchestral piece is really, it's a different thing. You have to visualize the whole piece. You have to see it from beginning to end.
I've been telling Shannon that about my Johnson. Same thing, a piece. You got to envision my whole piece, and she doesn't want to.
Well, you have to see the arc of the piece. So
I get it. So you've seen it. You know what you're talking about.
And to do that, you have to make a lot of notes and write a lot of themes and try to figure out what it's like building a building. You know, you have to figure out what musical ideas are going to be strong enough foundation to build a piece that'll last 20 minutes or more and not get boring.
Do you focus on any one particular instrument that you like more in classical? Like, oh, I like writing for the string section better than the horn section, or I don't know how that fucking works.
No, and that's one thing that I've noticed about in the performances that I've had, and I've been very lucky to have a lot of orchestral performances for somebody that's been doing it, especially for a rock guy to be accepted in the community. The players like my music because I spread it out among all the sections. You know, I give everybody something to do. Now, having said that, I'm writing a violin concerto for Nashville Symphony. And of course, I'm focusing on the violin.
Well, that'd be weird if you didn't. Did you ever think about doing, like the Scorpions did this, a few bands, I think Aerosmith did this, a symphonic version of Winger songs?
Yeah, my record company has been wanting me to do that for a while. I don't love that because it's like superimposing orchestra on a rock band, unless it's, and it can sound so trite in so many, you know, and contrived, you know. The only way I would want to do that is if I really integrated the two together and was able to create something where it was feeding off of each other rather than just kind of like putting a blanket of a giant orchestra over.
Meaning like a new Winger record that was written with a symphony in mind. Is that what you're saying?
That would be cool. But that's, you know, that's not a project I would probably take on because I've got so many other ideas ahead of that in the queue that I might get to that when I'm, you know, 80 or something.
Oh, because I was going to say, if that's happening, can you at least call me for that one to play the triangle? I could do that. You know, that's something.
Exactly. Okay, March 17th through 19th, my first symphony is being premiered in Nashville. So for all of you who, you know, want to come, anybody who lives here or anybody who wants to come here, because Nashville Symphony is like 14-time Grammy winning orchestra. They're recording it for an album, and it's in, and you know, it's going to be pretty awesome.
Honestly, never being to Nashville, what a fucking cool reason to go to Nashville. Say, go see Kip Symphony.
Let's go, Ralph.
I'll do it. You guys want to do it? Yes. Let's do it. That'd be fucking cool as shit. I'm going to
that crazy hot chicken right before and see if we can hold it in.
I'll do it, man. That sounds like a lot of fun. All right, a couple of last questions and then we're going to wrap it up. But here we go. Number one, is it right that you actually are the one that got Nita Strauss into Alice Cooper, sort of?
Excuse me one second.
I don't know if that means it's true or not.
She's probably texting.
He needs a moment.
Oh, man. I didn't realize it was such a powerful question.
Can I say then that just to go back for a second, sir, if you ever did 17 and Easy Come, Easy Go with the sympathy, it would change my life. And also, I really butchered that word. I called it sympathy like it was for the devil. So please forgive my ignorance. I went to public school in Nevada. Please forgive me, Mr. Winger. I'm trying really hard to impress you. I'm fucking up all over the country.
And by the way, I will say this. One of my favorite Winger songs of all time, and I've told you this before, but you're not going to remember. Why would you? Was On Pull, In for the Kill. Love that song.
Thank you.
Oh, my God, I love that song. I don't know why that wasn't a hit.
Well, because we were up against – I'm surprised we had a hit with Down Incognito because, I mean, we were – our name was totally toxic at the time, and we couldn't get arrested. So we did pretty well on that album, considering. To answer your question, yes, I was the one that got Nita into Alice Cooper. I met Nita Strauss through – Jason Green, who was kind of managing her and a couple of the Iron Maidens. He was working with them. He introduced me to her. And then my accountant, my business manager, I just happened to be talking to him one day. And he said, "Wow, I got a weird call from Alice Cooper. They were calling to ask if Allison from the Donnas was available because Orianti was leaving and she wasn't because she went back to school." And I said, "I got the perfect person." And so I hung up the phone and I can't remember who I called first, but I got Nita's number from Jason and I texted Nita and I said, I think I got a gig for you.
Jesus, and that's a hell of a gig to get.
And then I introduced her to Bob Ezrin and Shep Gordon and I made that connection. But
does she send you a Christmas gift every year now? Because you basically changed her life.
That's true, but no, she doesn't. But you know, the thing is you can open doors for people, but they have to live up to it. And Nita lived up to it, and she really did, you know. So
right. But if you got me the audition, I wouldn't get it. You still got to get the audition. You know what I mean? You made the audition happen. I don't know.
True, I did. And I've done that for a few people. I like to help people.
Who else? Is there someone else we would know?
I made the call for Jason Green to get in Alice and Reb Beach, and I helped Reb get in Whitesnake.
Wow. And that's pretty cool.
And I can't think of others, but I like to do that.
Reb's been in Whitesnake probably the longest out of any guitarist ever in Whitesnake, I think, at this point, right?
Yes, and the thing is that the music business is so difficult. Like, you know, you want people to help you get up. You gotta reach down and help people come up. Mm-hmm. Bo Hill helped me come up.
I know Kane Roberts helped you a lot. And I know Alice Cooper's always been, you know, he's one of those very giving dudes, right? Oh,
incredibly generous. Yeah. And Kane and I, we've always been best, really good friends. We still talk a lot. And, Kane was actually the one that suggested that I tell Alice that I would be available for touring. And so, you know, Kane is responsible for me being an Alice.
It's just funny. It's like, what a egotistical thing. Hey, Alice, I'm available for touring. It's like, who gives a shit? Why are you telling me this?
No. It wasn't like that. I said, quote, "Hey, man, if you tour and you need somebody, I would love to do it."
Oh, I like it better that way. Hey, dude, look, I'm available for touring, just so you know. And also, were you ever intimidated by Kane Roberts' bulging muscles?
No, man. Kane is very funny, very unassuming, and just super generous guy as well. So he's not. It's not.
You know, it didn't happen, but I almost had sex with his sister. I forget her name, but we were talking on Facebook for a long time, and she was so hot. I forgot her name. She has multiple sisters, I believe. It was from a half-sister, but she was so hot. Oh, my God. It got close. He's a good-looking man, Kane Roberts, but it never happened, so it doesn't matter.
It wasn't him.
I mean, no, it would have been him. He's big enough. He could have manhandled me. What's the difference? And then this is very cool. And then we'll wrap up the first. Is this true that you wrote a letter to Alan Parsons when you were very young, and then you became their singer briefly? You sang with them for a little bit.
I think I have it. Hold on a second.
Holy shit. That's cool as shit.
Also, Ralph, that might be the greatest sentence I've ever heard you say on this show. I almost had sex with his sister. I don't know her name.
I mean, it's so long.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Literally, no, we're talking about 20 years ago now, maybe 15 years ago.
Just bravo. Sure.
Oh, my God, you saved it.
So I wrote the letter, and I sent him our demo, and so he wrote me back.
That's crazy.
That's his handwriting. And
so you've had this for 35, 40 years at this point, at least.
He sent us this.
Dear Wingers.
Yeah.
The Z.
He's and got then, wonderful penmanship. Holy shit.
Alan Parsons. It looks like it says Alan Passes, but I'll assume it's Parsons. That's cool.
Yeah, that's I got a lot of trivia here for you. Here's my first commission check for classical music.
$600. And we just got your bank account information. Great. Shannon, screenshot that.
Exactly. What else do I have in here? I've got some cool stuff in here. I've got, here's Franz Liszt's autograph. So I collect autographs from composers. I'm quite the geek. I've got quite a few of them. So anyway,
is there a memorabilia item to you that's your grab first if the house is burning memorabilia item?
Oh, that's an excellent question. My computer hard drives.
Well, let's assume all that's safe. You know, I'm not talking about that. There's some reason. I mean, a memorabilia item. This is like, you know, the one thing you get to save that's not, you know, necessity for your life.
The picture of my girlfriend next to my bed.
Really? Well, you think you have your girlfriend? That would be easy enough.
Yeah, well, it's a special picture, so I really take that. Yeah.
Okay. By the way, that's the first thing I would save too, is the picture of your girlfriend that's next to my bed. And then the last thing I'm going to say before we ask the first question, then if James, you have anything else I left out, but it's a quote that you said that I really liked, which is, there's art in everything and you have to look for elegance in everyday life. And I think that's a great way to look at life. Like, maybe you're a real estate agent and that can be your art. Maybe you are a janitor and somehow that can be your art. You find your passion in what you do if you choose to make that your passion.
I totally agree with that. And that's that. It couldn't be more true, because there is art in everything. And too often people think less of themselves if they don't do art in the cliche way. And that's just a self-deprecating way to look at life, because you can make an art out of anything. And whatever is your passion really is your art. So it could be shoveling a box of rocks. I mean, it could be anything, man.
Could be hitting on girls on Instagram. That's my passion. I do that. I've made an art form out of that, I feel.
Yeah, you're the boss out of that.
You got her, man. Let's keep pounding that into the gut.
Eventually, I get it. That's what happens. That's really great. All right, Janet, we got to ask the first right now.
The first time ever I saw
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, as you know, or maybe you didn't know, but we ask every artist this. By the way, Alice Cooper just answered this not that long ago, and his answers got us a lot of press, which is, the question is, your first experience with all three, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you, the first concert you went to on your own volition, no one else dragged you, you say, I want to go see this group.
Black Sabbath, 1976, at the Denver Coliseum.
Wow, that's a great one. How old were you?
Well, I was 76. I was born in 61, so 15.
All right, well, that's great. I was trying to do the math in my head. I came up with 38. That was wrong, but that's pretty cool. And you were a big fan already. Obviously, you grew up around rock and music, so you were already just deeply ensconced in the world of rock, so you knew you wanted to go see these guys.
Totally. I was already playing all their tunes. I mean, I've been playing for a long time. It wasn't my first concert. My first concert was Bread.
Well, I loved Bread. They were so good in the 70s.
Several years before that, my dad took us, because, you know, my dad and mom were in a band. You know, my dad took us. And David Gates, I'm still waiting to meet him because he had a Beatle bass. And my dad took me up to meet him afterwards. They were playing in a high school gymnasium. And I walked up to him and I said, man, I got a bass just like that. And he goes, well, if you keep playing it, one day you'll make it.
What was the big, Lost Without Your Love? That was their big one, right?
Oh, my God. They had so many hits, dude.
I just remember Lost Without Your Love. It was a great song. They had so many good songs. They were great. Okay, so now we go to drugs. You've never been really known as a drug guy, but I assume you tried at least something. So the way we phrase this is, the first drug you ever tried, ideally after weed, unless weed wasn't the first drug you ever tried. But if you've never done any, if you've only done whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I did cocaine when I was 15, but I didn't like it. And I've probably done that on a handful of times in my life. Mushroom.
Drug guy, right?
No, not into it at all.
Okay, so you did cocaine. You liked it enough to try it a couple times, but it wasn't something that stuck.
Yeah, it was only something that you did because you were like, that everybody thought it was cool, you know, but it didn't do any. It was like, oh my God, I feel so great. Let's kill ourselves. You know, it was like awful.
That's James' waking mantra every day. That's what he says when he wakes up in the morning.
Takes me 3 hours just to get out of bed. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I just thinking about it, I don't even drink coffee, dude. I'm like,
are you totally sober now? Nothing, no alcohol, no nothing?
I haven't had a drink since 2012.
Okay, that's not that long, but it is. Now it's about 10 years almost.
I was never a big alcoholic. I quit because it was really hurting my voice and performance. So, but I do have alcoholism in my family, and I can put it away. I mean, I can drink 2 bottles of wine, no problem. I mean, just like, you know, I can just put that shit away, and I can drive on it and do all that stuff. And I just figured, okay, I've had enough of that, moving on.
Is there a vice in your life or not? Is music your vice? Is there anything that you look at that, I should slow down on this? Like, is it fried chicken or something? Yeah. I don't know.
Kind of Ben and Jerry's?
Potato chips. Okay. Are you vegan or anything? No, you're not. Okay. Shannon's been vegan for how long now, Shannon? 2 years?
A year and a half.
Year and a half. That's good. I'm not. I just love food too much. Okay. And then now, the first time you had sex?
12 years old.
Woo-wee!
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. You were already a rock star.
I had hair on my chest so I could lie about my age, but, and she was 17.
Woo!
Yeah!
That's right.
See, that's the meaning of the song.
But before my balls dropped. No. Yeah, 12 years old, man. It was in Grand Lake, Colorado, and we were on a gig with my brothers, and I had sex the first night.
So did she see you perform?
Well, it was really like, oops, what happened? That's never happened before.
Well, literally, it's true. It never happened before.
That was it. Like one home.
This changes the whole song to me, sir, because Daddy says you're too young.
Exactly.
Okay, a couple of questions on that. A, did she know afterwards or before at any point that you find out that you were 12?
That's an excellent question. I have no idea.
Okay.
God, what if she's a fan of this podcast?
And her claim to life is that she had sex. She de-virginized Kip Winger. That'd be fucking great. That's really funny.
She get canceled.
Number two, I guess. Did you? I mean, is this stupid? I guess if you had hair on your chest, you could have ejaculate at 12. You probably already hit some sort of puberty at that point. Because it sounds like you didn't wear a condom, or did you wear a condom?
Of course I did. And yes to all of those questions.
Wait a minute. You were younger you were older when you went to your first concert. When you saw Geezer Butler playing bass, playing NIB.
Already getting
virginized. This is fucking insane.
Just remember, I'd done a lot of gigs, man. You know, I was doing a lot of gigs.
That was my follow-up question. Did she sleep with you because she saw the band play?
Yes.
Oh, that's it. So, you know, it's funny. Gilbert Clark was on the show. We asked this question. He used a follow-up, but yours is both. He used the first time you had sex because you were who you were. But that was your first time having sex. Was also you had sex the first time because who you were. So you banged them both out together. That's pretty cool. I like that story.
Two birds in one stone.
Did you ever see her again? No.
No.
12-year-old Kip hits it and quits it. Right, James?
Unbelievable, sir. Bravo. Bravo. Oh, if I was texting Bravo, there'd be like 13 hours.
All right, so let's hit this. Ready? It's at Kip Winger, Winger the band, kipwinger.com, getjack.com, and the new Winger album, which is going to be called Seven, is coming out. Would you say it's fair to say this year?
I don't know. I'm really taking my time. I'm very happy with the songs. There's not going to be a bad song on it as far as I'm concerned. I don't know the release date. One thing I want to add is that for all of you who are watching this interview, I do not talk to people online. There's a lot of imposters out there saying that they're me, and I'm sure a lot of other artists trying to get numbers and money and all this kind of stuff. I do not talk to people online on any profile under any circumstance. So the official URLs, that's the only place you can like and do all that stuff. If you want to contact me, you can go to my webpage and, you know, email my agent.
All right, that's fair. Good to assess that. Let me ask you this. Now that you're writing the new album and you are a Grammy-nominated artist, does that give you more clout over Beach? You say, look, dude, this is how it goes. I'm the Grammy dude. You're not. This is how we're going to write it.
No, man. My thing is, like, I like to work with great musicians, so they blow me away. You know?
Yeah, you said that somewhere. Surround yourself with people that are better at it than you are.
Yeah, and I don't need to be right about anything. I know what I want to hear. I'm very clear about that. Like, I know what I'm hearing. I know what I want to hear. But I'm always hoping I'll be surprised.
Okay. And now that March date again, because we're all three of us going to go together to that March date. Where? What is that?
17 through 19.
And can we buy tickets now, or are they not on?
No, I think you can. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to buy tickets, Shannon. We're all going to this.
Patrick's Day in Nashville and Winger Sympathy.
Sympathy. Yeah, we should call it. That should be the name of it. When you put out the orchestra album, it should be called Winger Sympathy for this idiot right here.
It's a rock and peace, man. I mean, you know, a lot of what I've tried to do in my classical music with the big pieces is to make them rock. You know, the first movement is really rock.
Let me say this. Collectively, I believe.
Sample. Hold on a second.
I believe it will be the most cultured thing we've ever done on the show.
Well, hold on. Well, where is it? Let's see.
Now up comes a naked video of him and his girlfriend. I'm like, oh, not that.
Yeah, I do feel we're like the old Rodney joke when it comes to culture. It's a. Can't do nothing right. We went to the ballet and forgot the sandwiches.
Here's the riff.
Too soon? This thing on? What are we doing?
I'll tell you this. Okay, here comes a big chord and then the riff. So it's, you know, this thing.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. I take Morse code and I use four words in Morse code and I build the rhythm around those and then I build themes over it.
What's the word?
Well, you'll have to wait for the performance because.
So it ties to it. All right. That's wild.
Holding the concept until the performance comes.
Okay. That's great. That's awesome. All right. Mr. Kip Winger, thank you so much for being a part of this episode.
Thank you very much, you guys. I appreciate it. Nice to see you, Ralph, as always.
Nice to see you too. It's been a long time. I've
enjoyed your interviews, by the way, since I think the first interview we did was on the Pull Tour in 93 at Stone Pony, right?
So, yeah, at Stone Pony. Yeah, we did a live broadcast from the Stone Pony. Good memory. That's wild. In fact, my former intern just brought that up and said, I remember grabbing Kip from the dressing room and bringing him. And you said to him, I don't want to have to sit around and wait. Can you please make sure when I come in that they're sitting ready to go? And as soon as he sat you down, we went to commercial break. And he said he remembers you gave him a look like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Funny.
Sorry, because when I'm getting ready to do a gig, it's all focused.
I also was always amazed, by the way, any rock star singer, different if you're a drummer, but that would come and do an interview before a gig. I was always shocked that anyone would do that because I never expected it ever.
Don't like doing that. But Yeah. So anyway, I remember that. And then you've always given great interviews. So anytime I can help you out, if you want to get to anybody that you can't, call me up. Maybe I have their number.
All right, great. And by the way, you'd think if you liked me so much, I would have gotten a fucking call for your video. That's all I'm going to say, you know?
Rub that in. Just rub that in.
Someone in Nashville in March, baby.
All right, quickly, James, your plugs?
Look, man, I feel like worthless. This is usually the time where I stream The James Madden on Instagrams and promote the Peanut Allergy song on Spotify and all that cool shit, the Commissioner Comedy podcast. Look, man, I'm going to start a new website called imacompletefailure.com. I feel like I can't compete.
And just have pictures of Kip Winger on there. Just have pictures of Kip on there. Just say, I'm a complete failure. Look at this fucking guy getting everything done.
I'm a worthless fucking 43-year-old who's just pretending that he's at the peak of his career. Holy shit, man.
And I just need to interject that I still don't feel like I've made it either, dude. So the self-hatred is in all of us. Okay.
Well, whereas I am delusionally think that I've accomplished everything I've ever wanted to accomplish. Shannon, your go.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Let's guess. Does Kip Winger believe in ghosts? I'm going to say yes.
I think so, too.
100% yes.
Bam. I knew it. I felt it. You should go on there. And I don't think you have any fight stories.
I have a lot of ghost stories. But
really?
Well, have her reach out to you, because don't tell it here, because she would love to hear those stories. Her podcast is a great show. It's all about that stuff. It'll be fantastic. Just follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast, all about health and wellness, the Good Sugar Podcast. I don't show this enough. My number top 100 book on Amazon about health and fitness. I don't show it enough, for God's sakes. And just follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. We'll see you next week on the SCR show. Thank you so much, Kip. And we'll do a song of the week. You pick a song, Kip. Maybe something. Give us a Winger song that you'd think nobody would suggest. Or maybe a Bread song. Why not? Or Black Sabbath. I don't care. Whatever you want to hear.
Oh, I love Hole in the Sky by Black Sabbath.
We'll do Hole in the Sky by Black Sabbath. We'll add it to the SDRShow.com/playlist. And Kip, thank you, sir. We'll talk again soon. And that's it for the SDR Show. Peace. All right, thanks for listening to the whole episode of the SDR Show. And if you've been listening for a while now, you know every week we highlight a show that is also on the Gas Digital Network. This week, it's a phenomenally interesting, fun, entertaining show with Corinne Fisher and Shane Smith. It's called Without a Country. It's like a political debate talk show, but with really interesting viewpoints. And I've been a fan for a while. It's just another one of these great shows that's on Gas Digital. All the more reason to head over to GasDigitalNetwork.com and use the code SDR to get the entire catalog of every episode. But you can get it right now, a clip from Without a Country on Gas Digital.
So canceling is wild. And when conservatives are like, we're the non-cancel party, it's like Dixie Chicks, Colin Kaepernick, Nike, Ellen DeGeneres, Samantha Bee, Beyonce, Target, Jane Fonda. Remember when that movie The Hunt came out? And they were like, no, and then it had to go straight to thing. Remember when they protested NASCAR because NASCAR banned the Confederate flag? When people were breaking their Keurigs? Remember when Kathy Griffith had a fake cutoff head of Donald Trump?
Oh, Griffin.
Griffin? Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
Kathy Griffith is a different person.
My bad, other person who I don't know. But anyway, it's wild that, like, listen, no one's on their high horse. You can't beat cancel culture by canceling, it's my point. So when conservatives
I see in theory, what they mean, to sort of give them a dose of their own medicine. But yes, you are correct in that it's like, well, you've been doing that for years with certainly with music. That's been a problem for a long time.
Listen, so it's just everyone does it. Everyone's guilty. This solution needs to be like, but politicizing it is just like laughable. They gotta not do that.
Well, politicizing things, as we've seen during the past year, is extremely dangerous. And like, I truly believe thousands of people died because COVID-19 was overly politicized.
Well, yeah.
And we'll probably continue to.
I was gonna say.
As people don't get vaccinated. Do whatever you want with your body. I really do feel that way. You certainly shouldn't have to do something that you don't want to your body. I'm very anti-medicine pretty much across the board, but I did get vaccinated.
Yeah, me too. I am to the point where it's like, hey, this is America. I guess this is what we do.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah, it's what makes us different from other countries is the choice is you are able to make that choice whether or not you want to get vaccinated, and I do think that's important. All right. And that's another thing the left is like. The left is just with the shouting of like, get vaccinated, wear your mask. I was like, I'm doing these things because I personally want to do these things. But the way you're speaking about doing these things online makes me not want to do them.
Yeah.
Even if the result will be I will get sick or die.
People saying that they're going to continue to wear masks because they don't want people to think that they're conservative is... absolutely. What did I tweeted about is making a mask that's a gun that points into my mouth because that's how it makes me feel when I read that. It's insane. Wow, so insane. How about don't wear a mask if you don't want to? Okay.
How about maybe where you stand politically, don't make it your entire fucking personality also.
It's just wild.
I know that's like a cute little tweet that's going around, like, you know, insert here, make it not your whole personality. Well, make your political identity not your whole fucking personality. Like, maybe have your own opinions about things. And then if you have your own opinion about each topic, maybe it'll be harder to fit yourself neatly into conservative or liberal. Because that's what's happened to me, and then just everyone doesn't like you. It's a nice place to be.
If you're vaccinated, don't wear a mask. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I was so mad the first, you know, I noticed a lot less people wearing their masks outside today just because I know such a large percentage of Manhattan is vaccinated. But like, as soon as they were like, you don't have to wear your mask outside, I didn't wear my mask anymore. And I was like, all you fucking hall monitors out here. That's what Manhattan is, such a fucking adult hall monitor vibe. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. It's just like, you love rules so much. You move to one of the most expensive cities in the world to follow your dreams, most likely. And then you can't stop following rules, you little bitches. I did all the things. I worked so hard to get that vaccination appointment. I got the second one. I waited the 2 weeks. I'm not wearing a mask anymore because that was the fucking agreement. What are you trying to prove? Who are you trying to be better than?
Yeah, it's fucking wild.
Your fucking mask.
I'm the same way. I just look at someone and I go, they're not wearing one. Okay. Why would I even think about it? There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do. I got vaccinated. I did what I was supposed to do. I have no more thoughts.
Exactly. I did the things.
So fucking
done,
crazy.
Moving on.
For people to be like shaming each other about it. I'm just like, wow. Well, cool life. You seem cool.
It's just, everyone's just so interested in what everyone else is doing. But, it's like they want to pretend like they care so much about other people through pointing fingers, like get masks, get vaccinated. But it's like, you don't care about other people. You don't care about the well-being of other people. You just want everyone to be like you. And you're like, well, I got vaccinated. I had to wear a mask. So like, I made all these sacrifices. So you should have to too. I've seen full op-eds talking about all the quote sacrifices people made during COVID and how annoyed they are that other people didn't make it. Well, it's like, that was your choice. And I agree with the choice that you made, but then don't say, don't whine and complain about it. It's like, well, you could have not made those sacrifices just like many other Americans didn't.
You could
have not stayed inside. Lots of people didn't. That was your choice.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I lost last year. I lost more money. I lost more money than I made my entire life legally leading up to that year combined. Mm-hmm. Just because I was like, oh, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to not wear a mask and I will fucking Tombstone. I will body slam someone through a table if they question me. Like, it's wild.
I mean, I think, yeah, it just, both sides got so, like almost like militaristic about everything. And it's like, there was a way to get through COVID. I'll read these things. Like, people are like, oh, I'm going to the supermarket for the first time since March 2020. And they're like 30 years old. I'm like, you're mentally ill.
Yeah, that's wild.
I don't know what to tell you other than you live a life in constant fear that is not based in reality. And it's nothing to be proud of. You really should see a doctor.
Yeah, and even then,
of the mind.
I saw people in Manhattan wearing like spacesuits. And like, cool, good for you. That's how you're comfortable to go out. But like, to just be like, I literally haven't gone to the grocery store for a year. It's like, get the spacesuit, dude. It's, do something, like, do more. I don't know. That's wild.
Some of my friends said things to me that I was like, I don't even feel safe around you. Like, what if something happened that we needed to defend ourselves? You know, what if there was a public shooting? It's like, I can't carry you too, because you have absolutely zero survival skills.
It's a very, very old Boy Scout joke. I don't have to be faster than the bear. I just have to be faster than you.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so there you go. Keep that in mind for next time you're in the wilderness or you're getting shot at. Also, don't zigzag. That's a myth.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Don't zigzag. Just run as fast as you can in one direction. It's very hard to shoot someone who's fast.
That's good to know.
There you go.
All right. Well, we spent a lot of time on that, but I mean...
Zigzagging is good for alligators, though.
Zigzagging is good for alligators?
Yeah. They can run super fast in a straight line. They can't turn for shit.
Holy shit. Thank you for telling me. I'm going to Florida soon. Gotta watch out
for
that.
So bear, we're running straight. Alligator, we're zigzagging.
No, bear, you play dead.
Oh, bear, you're playing
dead. Unless you're with someone, because the bear will only kill one person.
Okay, yeah. Why?
I don't know. Bears usually like to play with their food.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the bear will just do whatever, and then you get away. And then if it's a gator, you zigzag. And if it's a shooter, zigzagging doesn't work. Just run as fast as you can.
And Timothy Treadwell and his girlfriend got killed by the same bear.
That was a very hungry bear.
Yeah.
What, did they run? Did one of them run while the other one was getting eaten? One of you has to get eaten. Listen, that's a bad boyfriend. Because I would be like, run, babe. And then I would fight the bear Legends of the Fall style.
Oh my god! How long have you? Well, you're the second person I've dated who loves the movie Legends of the Fall.
It's a very good movie.
How long would you have to be dating this person to let a bear on their behalf?
Zero time. I would just be on my first date. Yeah, of course. I'm not going to let someone I'm with die. I take responsibility and be a man. If I'm with a person in the wilderness, I'm.
What if you're with another man?
Then we'll rock paper scissors for it.
Okay, fair.
I would hope that they want to die with me if they're a man. Let's go to Valhalla together.
That's so weird, Chang.
What? And also, by the way, I'm a little into the idea of being killed by a bear. That's pretty cool.
That's a cool way to go. It fits with your whole personality.
Thank you.